Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We are in Baltimore City. We are at Johns Hopkins University with Senator Mikulski in our third segment, episode three, part three, chapter three, all that stuff. First, I love the mosaic, and I alluded to that during our break, that I love your mosaic. But I talk about my dad being like a community leader through sports, that he had kids that he umpired for and led and refereed and coached, and I guess in the travel era. But you talked about the mosaic of Baltimore, and once you went neighborhood to neighborhood to be involved in local government, you met people. You met people at the front door. I'm assuming every neighborhood had good people and good leaders at that point. And then it's about how many of those people and how can they be activated, because everyone in every block, there's someone that owns something there, that has ownership of it, that wants to take that ownership. But finding the good people and the leaders, the civic activists, where you were, I don't know, 50 years ago, how has that changed neighborhood to neighborhood and trying to find these leaders to come together to bring communities together in our town?
Well, we can't. This is why I don't want to keep dwelling on nostalgia. First of all, when I ran for city council, I did something that hadn't been done ever, except when Sarbanes ran for the House of Delegates. I went door to door. I went door to door in every neighborhood, whether it was, you know, Highland Town, or my council district was over, you know, went all the way through to McKeldry Park, into the projects. One of my supporters was B. Gaddy of, et cetera. So, you know, you go door to door, you listen to people. They either yell at you or they say, why are you running? And, you know, so you learn a lot. You learn a lot, and it's very retail. So that was one thing. But the other was that it's not only what you do to get elected. It's what you do afterwards, which was to go to lots of community meetings. And I think what was sparked really in the era that I got started was that there were a lot of neighborhood associations. Remember, we did this before the cell phone. There were no cell phones.
No fax machines.
Right. That's right. No, right. No cell phones, no fax machines, and no iPhones, no iPads. So it was very up close and retail. And I loved it. I loved listening to the stories from the people. I always felt that the best ideas that I got came from the people, from not only going door to door or to listening to the community groups. I teamed up with, you know, stayed in very close touch with Antonia Keene, who was my campaign manager, another sociologist who had taught at Loyola University. You know, when I came to the city council, the way rape victims were treated was you stayed at the Pine Street station and you waited to a doctor come. And when the doctor came, it was not to treat you, but to examine you for forensic evidence, again, before DNA testing. And then you were on your own. By listening to the women's groups, we saw that this was a terrible situation. I asked Wally Orlinsky, I wanted to go outside the committee structure of the city council and have a rape task force. And he said, go for it. This is something new. We've never done a task force, because the committees were set up for zoning and stuff, and it was really the guys who had 50-year seniority on me. Tony Keene chaired it. We had everybody at the table, from women's activists to the police department to the ACLU, and there we came up with a plan after much discussion, wrenching battles, all of this, because the cops wanted to be sure they had the evidence to get the bad guy and stop the bad guy, which we wanted, and we wanted help for the victim. And how could we do it? You know what the solution was? We agreed, and with the cooperation of University of Maryland, Johns Hopkins, and Mercy, the women would go to those three institutions. Nurses would be trained in a new field called forensic nursing, new field, where they could, meeting national standards, do what was necessary for the evidence part, but they would be in an environment where the women were treated for the assault and then would have the follow-up resources to deal with it. That's the kind of stuff we did. But it started with listening to women's groups.
Listening. I mean, you
and then say, well, you'll never get the lawyers and the cops and those women's groups. They all they want to do is, you know, pick it. I said, no, we want to solve problems. And we want to help these victims. And I believe that those police officers want to help those victims, too. Their idea is being a warrior against crime. We got that part. But we want to be sure we help the woman and we get the right person. So that's but it comes from a willingness to work together and also to be willing to listen to all sides and then see how you can come up with. Remember what I said, desirable, achievable, and affordable. So you have to listen and work on these issues.
Well, Senator, it obviously resonated for years, almost 50 years of elective office, lost one election, the very first one, I think. Is my history correct? You lost,
no,
never lost again?
It was after I was the city council, right. No. It was 1974 against Mac Mathias.
And it's the only one you ever lost, right?
Yes, and I knew.
That's what I'm saying.
That, you know, in 1974, someone who we all admire tremendously, Senator Charles Mac Mathias, a very moderate Republican senator, was being attacked in his own party for being too moderate and also too pro-civil service employees, which are, you know, we have over, you know, 300,000 federal employees in this state. So they work at NIH and they work in military bases.
NSA, and so sure.
That's exactly right. And so Governor Mandel was going to run a returning POW, Mr. Bunny Talley, and I was afraid that Mathias would lose in his primary because the Nixon people were backing Helen Bentley to run for the Senate. And I went around and I talked to everybody to try to get them to run. Nobody would. I actually talked to Governor Mandel. Mandel was governor, and he said, well, Barbara, if you feel that strongly, run yourself. So I'm a member of the city council. I've been in politics 3 years. Okay? I wore bell bottoms and I fought the highway. What the hell is this? So
you weren't yet,
yes,
Senator. You weren't yet, Senator Barb.
No. I was bell bottom trousers.
Bell bottom Barb.
Barb here.
But she had great
and
pastries.
The so anyway, I thought we have to have some money. So I walked out of Mandel's office and the press said, what did you decide? And I said, Governor Mandel encouraged me to run for the Senate. Kind of. But then I was in this race. I knew it was a long shot, but I got a red van and I traveled the state and I learned a lot. And one night, though, I was coming back. It was the close of filing, and Mrs. Bentley has to decide whether to file. She puffed and puffed as Helen was. Could do. I at times,
you knew her well.
At times I was a facilitator, and she then said, no, I'm not going to run for the Senate. And I took my notebook where I was trying to collect names for volunteers, and I banged the dashboard of the car, and I said, Helen, you cannot do this to me. Don't quit, Helen. Run, Helen, run. So there I was in the fight of my life, and I got out there, gave it everything I could. Senator Mathias won the election. I learned a lot. And 2 years later, when Paul Sarbanes ran for the Senate, I ran for his House seat, and that took me to Congress.
And never lost again and got vote totals all over the state. I want to jump to the census. But I do want to go to the census, but I do want to say labels, I know, are for jelly jars. But is it safe to say that over your career, you were seen as a progressive or a quote-unquote liberal Democrat? Is that a fair? Okay. How does this liberal Democrat from Highland Town get these incredible vote totals on the Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, all over the state, and you win every election from that point on? Because I think it's important for people to know. What did you were selling something that people were buying. What was it? What resonated
with you?
Well, I wasn't
selling anything.
Right.
That was maybe, right. Maybe that's what I,
there you go.
Why I was successful. I wasn't selling anything. And but I made it my business to make sure that I toured the state every year. And we worked on practical problems. and practical solutions. But if you have the chance to go on YouTube and listen to my farewell speech in the Senate, what I said that I tried to devote my life where no issue was too small and no cause, there was no problem too small or no issue that I wouldn't, too big that I wouldn't take on. And I would work with the people. I loved going to the round tables I had. I would do diner tours where it wasn't canned and rehearsed and set up, where I would just go from diner to diner, and then when diners changed to McDonald's or whatever, walk in and just walk around to the tables. Hi, Barb, I'm here. Anything you want to say to me? Sometimes they didn't want to talk to me. That's fine. Sometimes they did. And I would pick up either constituent service or like an idea that I'd like to say, can I call you and follow up on? And it was where I got some of my best advocacy ideas.
Recipe for success.
I was going to say, you hate injustice, right? You hate injustice. I just feel like you wake up every day and trying to fight that.
Yes, I hate injustice, but that's an abstract. What I don't like is the daily ways that at times, you know, the system is rigged against the people. I didn't like where the cruel rules of government really stuck it to people. You know, when you went, if you had a loved one that went into a nursing home, like my dear father because of Alzheimer's, the consequences. My father was the best guy in the world. You talk a lot about Grandmother's Bakery, but Dad ran a grocery store. When he passed away, there were over 1,000 people at Sacred Heart Church to pay their respects to my father. My father believed in education for girls at a time when it wasn't always popular. So, but my father ran this, and then out of the blue, he began to fail. So, but what we saw was that in order to, when a person goes into a nursing home, you have to spend down your life savings before you can get any help from a government program.
My mother died a year and a half ago. I got a $9,000 bill right at the deadline a year ago. Have no idea where it came from. Can't find anybody on the phone to figure out why I even owe it. My mother died a year and a half ago. 98 years old.
See, you're exactly the person I would have loved to talk to as a senator and have you connected to the very talented staff that I had. But in listening here, I said you often went, one spouse was going bankrupt. I believe in family responsibility. We do family responsibility, but family bankruptcy, no. So listening and so on, I went to work in the Senate to do legislation called Anti-Spousal Anti-Impoverishment Act, where you did not have to spend down your life savings or have a lien placed on your home or your family farm. That legislation did pass. It's one of the few safety nets. And I'll talk with you after the podcast about how you should. Well, let me tell you, you should actually call your congressman and say, look, I need help with this Medicaid thing from the nursing home. Can you help me get it straightened out? Because there should be protections for you and your family where you had a responsibility, but you also reach a point where you were supposed to get some help.
Well, you also have no road paved. You've never been through it before. You wouldn't know. Don Mohler here, Senator Barbara Mikulski. It's Barbara, Baltimore Positive. It's episode 3 and our final segment. You've been wanting to get the census.
I do, because I know Senator and I talked a while back, and your passion for the census is real. I mean, it's maybe it goes back to the sense of injustice, but you truly, I guess they call it the complete count. We want the complete and accurate count. And tell people what you're doing regarding the census and why you're so passionate about the census that's coming up in 2020.
Why I'm so passionate about the census. You know, we have a wonderful delegation in Washington, and they fight for federal funds, and they fight for federal funds for all of our communities, whether it's Garrett County, Somerset County, our metropolitan area, Baltimore City, and our surrounding counties. However, 90% of all federal funds coming into a subdivision like Baltimore City or Baltimore County or to the state for Governor Hogan will be formula driven. It will all be based on the census, whether it is funding for public education, Title I, Title II, whether it's funding for mass transit. All of our transportation money is formula-driven. Help for local governments, community development, block grants, all formula-driven. So if we don't get a good census, which is done every 10 years, we will financially disadvantage ourselves from what we should get from the federal government for over a decade, a disadvantage for 10 years. So when we talk about guts, oh, go listen to the people, and so on, I believe in that. But, you know, people in neighborhoods are tired of kumbaya politics. Oh, let's all hold hands and we're all going to, you know, listen. And then there's no follow through. What I think can be done in not only Baltimore City, but our surrounding neighbors in the counties. Because remember, we're not competing each other.
Right.
What Baltimore would get is based on Baltimore's population. What Baltimore County or Carroll County or Anne Arundel get is based on their population. So we're only getting our fair share back in what we pay in federal taxes. So if you're paying a federal tax, you want your fair share to come back to where the county or the city where you live. So we're not competing against each other. So it's not like if Baltimore City gets it, Carroll County won't. No, it's they need their complete counts as well. And I think if we all worked together, in the city, if we all work together, neighborhood by neighborhood, employers being model employers to help with this, we will not only get a complete count, but we do it in a way that's community building, community affirming, community recognizing. And then at the end of the day, when we have an excellent count, we all can feel satisfied that we helped make it happen. And so that's what I was working on with Mayor Pugh and now hope to work on with Mayor Young, and also have been talking to other counties. I know Johnny O is taking this up for Baltimore.
Absolutely.
County. Mr. Pittman is taking it up for Anne Arundel, and I know that other counties are doing the same.
I think Calvin Ball is on top of it in Harris. Yes. County. So I think there. Now I'm trying to imagine. I know you're not into nostalgia, but we don't have to go back that far. Let's just go back.
We're at the end now.
I love fond memories.
No, I know.
I love fond memories, but we can't keep thinking that we're going to go back to something that we're not.
All I want to go back is a couple of years and imagine a time when a president is trying to put a citizenship question on the census, and imagine how Senator Mikulski reacts on the floor of the Senate to that, which by reports show that it could depress the census numbers by as many as 5.3%. I mean, react to the idea of putting a question about citizenship, which I don't think has been on there since 1950.
Well, first of all, let's follow the Constitution.
Right.
You know, every member of Congress takes an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You know, that's a serious oath, and because it calls your best self forward for national security. But the census says that the Constitution mandates a census. The Constitution mandates it, but it mandates residents. If you read the Constitution, it says residents. It does not say citizens. So people who are here, maybe you want a student visa. It could be somebody going to medical school who's here from Germany would be counted in the census. Because guess what? They're using our public facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
Sending their children to
so
our schools.
I believe that right now, this is just another, the impact will be chilling. It'll be chilling on our Latino community or new immigrant community, even if they're here legally, because it essentially means they're going to come under double scrutiny. They could face harassment.
They want to hide, essentially, right?
No, not everybody wants to hide. But people have been from totalitarian and brutal governments, and they're afraid of government.
Period.
Right.
Listen.
So when you see the National Guard in a snowstorm, you feel comforted. For a lot of people, when they see a National Guard, they don't feel that cool about it from the countries they came from.
Understood. Yeah,
great point. I know you want. We've got a few minutes.
We're going to wrap.
I know you want to talk a little bit about a speech that the senator made in 1970, because it sounds like it could have been.
And this isn't nostalgia, right? I mean, and this is something that's very easily Googleable. Everyone knows you, okay? And I've known of you for 50 years. I saw you give the greatest speech ever at Maritime Magic a couple years ago down there at the Living Classrooms, one of our partners. And I had no idea. I mean, I knew what a social warrior you were, and I always think of Barb hates injustice. That's what I would have said about you when I was 12 years old, watching you on TV rail and trying to fight for people.
Right, and one
you know?
Of the things of injustice is you follow the law. It's not just if you don't follow the law. And guess what's the supreme law of our land? The Constitution of the United States of America. And not just one amendment, all of the amendments.
So reading your quote here, and I can read the whole thing, and it's in blue, and Don has it here. America is not a melting pot. It is a sizzling cauldron for the ethnic American who feels he's been politically quartered and legally extorted by both government and private enterprise. So I'll let people read through this, but this could have been written. I could Melania this and just lift this and say it's mine and read it. You know, if I run for mayor, and people would say, yeah, that's where we are right now. Do you see any similarity between 50 years ago and now, and the aftermath of 68 and the aftermath of Freddie Gray here, for what the potential of our city is and what the potential of the region is, that this next birth, you talk about 2.0, 3.0, that the next version of Baltimore with these jobs, that this, it feels like Archie Bunker on the couch again in 1973 when I was a little boy, watching what's going on right now with Donald Trump and our government and how people are disenfranchised. And bringing people together in Baltimore, I'm sure that was the hardest thing to do in 1971 and 72. Knocking on doors for you is there were people that didn't want to answer the door because maybe what you look like.
Oh, it was not easy being a woman running for political office then, and we were a novelty, you know, and we were indeed a novelty. And that's maybe we'll come back when you do your
sure.
second
well,
round.
Well, that's changed dramatically in 50
second
years.
Second round of when we do the second rounds of a podcast. But when I wrote that article, what I saw was this. That there was already the disinvestment in cities. There was already the beginning of the deindustrialization. The first place to close was the stainless steel place up by Edison Highway. Then came the shipyards. But what I saw was that black and white people were being pitted against each other for the same things. And there was the assumption that in some because of a neighborhood was white, it was getting everything, when that wasn't true. That we hadn't had a new school in 50 years. We hadn't had our library either. But rather than fight each other to form a coalition, because both neighborhoods needed it. Both the neighborhoods needed the school. So my whole op-ed was the system is rigged against the little people. And we are being pitted against each other so that we fight each other rather than forming a coalition.
That's 2019, though, right?
It's amazing.
Forming a coalition to look at where we're heading. And this is why I like the census. It's not one community fighting another. It's let's do the count so that we get our fair share back of federal funds that can be used for the good that it's supposed to.
Yeah, we put this thing together, Don. All I wanted to say was anybody that listened, it would be time well spent.
Well,
right?
I knew sitting with the senator would be remarkable and remarkable.
I'm bringing the mic stand next time. Now she's already.
I do want to say that we always like to end. You talked a little bit when we came in about a movie you saw this weekend. We always like to ask folks. You work so hard. The folks that we're talking to, whether it's Dutch or Malia, we're having Freeman Hrabowski on in about a week. Just hardworking people. I don't think you all ever sleep, but when you do wind down and keep it, what does Senator Barb do to relax? What do you like to do when you're not working 24 hours a day?
Well, actually, because I have retired, I have said that I didn't want a new job. I wanted a little bit of a new life and some mandates. But I like what everybody else likes. I like to go out to restaurants with friends. I have a little saying, I never met a calorie I didn't like or a hand I didn't want to shake.
How did we do a show with her without food involved?
I don't know.
And, I also like to go to the movies, and I like the popular ones. I like A Star Is Born. I don't think I could quite do the Lady Gaga tattoos or the costumes, but I
leave the impersonations.
Then I just saw the Ruth Ginsburg movie where she, and I love documentaries,
right.
And the documentaries of Justice Ginsburg, and then also the movie in which she takes the first case on gender discrimination to the Supreme Court. And so I like going to movies.
And I know you like your sports. I know you like your Ravens and your Orioles.
But I like the Ravens. I like the Orioles. But I also like other hometown teams called the Baltimore Symphony, our vibrant theater scene in which we have everything from the Hippodrome with Hamilton coming to like the Vagabonds.
Right.
And
it's a great, again, Baltimore positive. So many great things.
Or arena, or the arena theater.
I
yes.
mean, it's just, I got to tell a quick story before we close about the senator. I don't know if I've even shared it with her.
Uh-oh.
I was down a couple of years ago in Washington, D.C. to see James Taylor and Carole King. This speaks to the stature of the senator. So I'm in the nosebleed sections with a friend, and friend has there's going to do a little Carole King for you. So a friend of mine has some binoculars, and he's looking, and he goes, "Hey, Don, look down there. Down there near the front, there's Senator Mikulski. She likes Carole King and James. She's here, and she's with another lady." And I said, "She's with another lady?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well, who's the other lady?" He goes, "I don't know. She's with another lady." I said, "Well, hand me the binoculars." I turned to the guy. I said, "That's Secretary of State Clinton, you fool." Am I correct?
Yeah. We're Carole King groupies.
I think if I remember, you were even dancing a little bit that night.
Oh, yeah, and I'm a James Taylor fan.
Oh,
I went to see the show.
You,
the show in New York, it's beautiful.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, and if you ask the music, everybody, my father was a Lawrence Welk guy. He liked Lawrence Welk. But I like doo-wop. Because you actually can hear the words.
Same thing.
Sing
Dutch
the
said.
Words.
Yeah. Same thing.
Dutch was a Motown guy. He liked Motown. Dutch was a Motown guy.
And Motown.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Dutch was a Motown. How can you do better than end on doo-wop, Motown? Senator Mikulski, it's been a pleasure. Baltimore Positive. Always great to see you.
Till we meet again.
America is not a melting pot. There it is. So I got your quotes. Thank you very much. It's really nice to visit with you. I'm sorry I've been doing this 30 years. I'm embarrassed I haven't visited with you. We would have been friends.
We are friends. And may the force be with
there
us.
There you go.
All right, there it is. Barbara Mikulski joining us here. Baltimore Positive. Don Mohler, former Baltimore County Executive. We're at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore City doing Baltimore Positive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.